Hey, Dorothy.
Yeah, coming at you from the car wash.
I love it. I love it. Perfect. All right. We got a few people hopping on here.
How are you, Shane? Are you having a good week?
I am having a great week. Thank you for asking. Yeah, doing great. How about you? Are you in town or traveling or what are you doing?
I'm excited.
You did? I'm sorry, you cut out there.
I said I'm in town. I'm heading to Iceland in a couple of weeks, though. Excited about that.
Ah, got it. Got it. Awesome. Awesome. That's pretty amazing. Iceland. How cool. So, Chris, greetings. How are you, brother?
Doing great, dude. Just getting ready for the big day and busy month. And my kid's graduating in 2 weeks, too, from college. So it's busy month, dude. That's a good month.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. We have someone here, G-U-Y-O. I don't know who that is. Would you be willing to identify yourself, whoever that is?
Oh, hi. It's Joy with from Hawaii.
Absolutely. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us. All right. So today we have, it looks like a couple of people are joining late. Let me just confirm that. Yep, looks that way. All right, let's do this. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about how to have better meetings. So when I started doing what I do for a living, I remember sitting in on a weekly meeting with a company. And in that weekly meeting, it was the president and all the senior leaders were in this meeting, and the meeting lasted roughly almost 3 hours. And it was like kind of hilarious to watch because nobody was engaged. People were just completely checked out. And the president was just powering through agenda item after agenda item. They would get on these rabbit trails and they would chase them all down and they would try to drain the cup on it and figure it all out. And then by the end of like 3 hours, people were just completely spent. They were exhausted. They were bored. They had checked out. And really, no one really knew what had gotten accomplished. And so then the next week, another meeting would happen. It would be another 2.5 hour meeting. And there was no sense of respect. It was always meant to be like an hour and a half meeting. And it would always go over by 30, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour. And people were just kind of driven crazy by it. And I remember thinking, like doing the math on like senior level leaders who are in a meeting like this. And I remember doing the math and going, how much do these people get paid per hour? How many hours did we just go through? How much did that meeting cost? and it was very expensive. It was an extremely expensive meeting. And so, and I watched as people literally were like, on their phones playing games, like at times, because they were just like, whatever he's talking about has nothing to do with me. I'll be checked in like 45 minutes. I'm just going to do other things or work. So I kind of took it upon myself to say, I want to find a better way to do this. And I read books and did research and talked to people and experimented with different methods and tried a bunch of different things. And kind of refined a methodology that is outlined in module 4. Welcome, Doug. Thanks for joining us. Module 4 is where you can find how to have better meetings. And it goes through a lot more details. But I thought what I could do on this call is just talk kind of philosophically about it. And then you can go to that module and there's a little guidebook that you can download and look at it, and it'll give you a cheat sheet for how to go through it. I don't necessarily think we need to spend our time going through every last detail of it. But here's the thing that I want you to understand is everything about that method of running meetings is designed to achieve three things. One is greater engagement. So the people actually want to be in the meetings, want to stay engaged in the meetings, are happy they're there. Two is efficiency, that you're actually saving yourself time. And three is accountability, that whatever is discussed is captured and is actually done. And so instead of feeling like you're the leader holding people, kind of having the dog people to keep them accountable, the meeting structure itself builds in the accountability. And so that's the objective. Those are the three goals. And so after trying lots of different things in a variety of contexts, this is the method that I feel like works the best. It's not sort of a, it's not lifted from any one source. It's really just my own experience of trying to help people figure this stuff out. So the first thing I want to talk about are the roles. So one thing you can think through is that meetings need to have clearly defined roles. And then we'll talk about the sections. And once you understand the roles and the sections of a given meeting, then what happens is you'll start to practice this method. And it's not going to feel normal at first. It's going to feel off at first. And you're going to forget, wait, what should I do here? And what needed to happen there? And all of that's normal and totally okay. So you want to give yourself weeks of practice, 6 weeks of trying to practice this. Some people will start it and they'll be like, it's kind of cumbersome. I don't really get it. And then they'll abandon it. My experience is that those organizations that push through that kind of foggy, I'm not sure which way to go or how, experience enormous shifts in engagement, efficiency, and accountability. And it's like, I've had clients tell me, private clients where I've introduced this, they've told me, where they'll pay me anywhere between $150,000 to $200,000, $300,000. I've actually been told for a year, they've told me that one thing alone actually was worth the entire engagement in terms of the impact of the business and how things actually function. So it's kind of simple, but it's helpful. So what are the roles? The first role is the leader. Most likely that's one of you on this call. You're supposed to be the leader. Second role is what we call the monkey handler or the action item captain. Doesn't really matter what you call it. So you have your leader who presides over the agenda, and then you have your action item captain, or we call it a monkey handler. The reason we call it a monkey handler is imagine you have a bunch of, like, it's the metaphor of the monkey on your back, like there's a monkey on my back. I want to get it off of my back. So anytime there's a to-do item, that becomes a monkey on your back. So we kind of playfully call it the monkey handler. And so the monkey handler role is every single week, there's a section where their job is to report out on how people are doing, to ask, did you do the thing you said you were going to do? That's how accountability gets built in. So you've got that role. You've got the monkey handler. You've got the what's called the timekeeper. Time is the only commodity we cannot make more of. It is the one thing that we are bound by that we can't make more of. And one of the things that we found is that when you introduce timestamps and a timekeeper who is there to alert you that the time is up for whatever thing you were going to talk about, it's sort of like those, I'm driving down the road, I've got a speedometer in my car, but somehow when there's an external device showing me my speed, I slow down. And so a weird thing happens when you have somebody accountable externally for keeping the time on specific sections of the meeting, you will rapidly speed up the meetings. That's how you create all the efficiency. It also helps with people who have a problem with the economy of word or thought. So some people just talk a lot. It could be the leader who talks a lot. It could be somebody else on your team who talks and kind of endlessly rambles. And one thing that we noticed is we had a guy who was notorious for just talking endlessly and constantly interrupting and talking more and more. When we introduced the timekeeper without even confronting him, he started to get much more efficient because he started to become aware, there's only so much time to have this part of the conversation. So those are like the three very important roles that everybody should have in a weekly tactical meeting. And the other thing that I want to make a distinction around is that there's a big difference between strategic meetings and tactical meetings. And the reason this is so critical is you want to ensure that you have a container that matches the content. So one of the reasons that story I told at the beginning, where the leader that I was working with would have 3-hour tactical meetings, is that he was guilty of what I call meeting mush, which is we're talking about something that is super tactical, like, oh, I've got this dashboard reporting and I want to talk about what's going on in our conversion rates. And the person would say, yeah, that's a good point. I like that. Or we maybe want to work on that. Another person goes, you know, what's really weird is I've heard there's a new technology that can make this a whole lot easier. And like, really, what's that technology? Well, it's this new technology. It's based on this and it's a totally different platform. Really, what does that cost? Well, you know, I've heard it was this, you know, I've heard that wasn't so good. And suddenly we're off talking about a larger strategic kind of operational change that has cost implications and research needed and all this. And we drained 15, 20 minutes talking about this technology that was a rabbit trail off of a dashboard conversation. And that's meeting mush. That's how you lose lots and lots of time in meetings, is that you don't have the discipline to say, is what we're talking about truly focused on agenda items that are only happening in the next week and a half, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks at the most. You really, that's what a tactical meeting is. Anything else needs to live in what's called the strategic parking lot. So a strategic parking lot, if you're in person, it's literally on a section of the whiteboard in the whatever office you're meeting or on a piece of paper. You're writing down, you're capturing, you're seeing as the leader, you're searching for what are those items that are longer term, bigger picture issues that you know need to be addressed, but they're not going to be addressed in this 90-minute weekly meeting. And so you'd say, hey, I think that lives in the strategic parking lot. That's a great question. I'm glad you raised it. Technology change is something we want to think through. Let's put that in the strategic parking lot. So you have two meetings at least in your company, but at minimum, you're going to have a weekly tactical, and then you're going to have probably a monthly or every other month strategy meeting. And a strategy meeting is run completely differently. It's very few agenda items, longer periods of time for agenda items to be explored, research, and preparation is usually required. And you're running a 2-hour strategy session, usually at minimum. And then you can also do quarterly strategy days. And then you can do annual strategy retreats if you want. And that's where you're trying to, you know, you're elongating the timelines for those agenda items. So you've got the three big roles. You've got the strategic parking lot. And now you're ready to start thinking through how the actual meeting agenda is going to go. And again, this is in module 4. There's a guidebook that will show you step-by-step everything I'm talking about. It'll give you all the details. So I would recommend you print that out, have that next to you, and just follow the script effectively. And it will help you lead these meetings. So the call today is really just to give you that big picture. So the first section that I recommend every meeting has is some kind of a meaningful check-in. And check-ins are designed to boost the mood of the room. So you're looking for positive orientation. Now, why is that important? Well, one of the reasons it's important is because most of the time we have meetings to discuss problems. Problems usually have stress, usually have tension, usually have negativity. You're meeting to deal with problems. Rarely do you go, hey, let's all meet and just talk about all the things that are going great. So you start the meeting off with like a 1 to 2 minutes total of a discussion about what is positive. Now, you can do this in lots of different ways. If you have company values, I recommend you have each person go around and take 30 seconds and say, take just a moment and reflect on one person in this room or another person in outside this room, doesn't matter, that is living out one of our values meaningfully. And then you're just going to go around and actually say, I'm choosing Dorothy. I think Dorothy really lived up to our value of inclusivity or diversity or excellence or accountability or whatever, because she did X, Y, and Z this week. Hey, that's great. Thanks, Dorothy. Next, Dorothy goes, I'm going to say, recognize Shane because I think he lived up to our value of creativity. He came up with this great new idea. Great. And you just go around and do that. And a weird thing happens. It boosts the mood of the room. And people start to have the regular feeling that, oh, okay, something really good's going to happen. You could also, if you don't have company values, you could say, hey, we're just going to go around and say, what's one win this week? Or you could go around and say, hey, what's something you're grateful for this week? on something that you appreciate about another person in this room, right? And you just, but that way everybody's participating. It's not just the leader going, okay, I'm going to recognize this person, this person. Well, let's get on with it. You're actually having everybody join you. So that's like max, maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes at the front of your meeting. Then you do what's called the monkey handler section. And so this is where one person who's assigned to collect all of the action items that were surfaced from the last meeting. So as a leader and everybody in the room, you're looking for two primary things. Well, really three things. You're looking for action items. You're looking for strategic parking lot issues, and you're looking for tensions that need to be processed. A tension is simply a gap between the current experience and the perceived potential. There's tension there, and you're just trying to resolve that. So that's usually like agenda items. Agenda items are designed to process tensions. But what an action or a monkey is you're saying, hey, we're having the meeting, and I'm thinking through this, and I go, you know what? I think what would help is if like Chris and I could meet and discuss this offline. That becomes a monkey. So the monkey handler, in this case, Renee, would say, okay, I'm going to type in the spreadsheet. Chris and Shane meet to discuss X. It'll be done. Chris and Shane, when are you going to do that by? And I go, we're going to do that this week sometime. Great. So by next week, we'll check in on you. Then we go to the next thing. And as we're talking, we're like, you know what? And Dorothy goes, you know what? I need to develop like a budget around that. Like, oh, okay, you need to develop a budget. Renee, Dorothy needs to develop a budget. Okay, great. Dorothy, when do you think that budget is going to be done by? I think it'll be done in 2 weeks. Great. Then it goes on the sheet, but the date is now 2 weeks. When you come back next week, when we get to the monkey handler section, Renee will simply read out, hey, Chris and Shane, did you guys meet? Yes or no? It's not a time to discuss. It's not a time to debate. It's a simple yes or no. No, we did not. Okay, when are you going to get that done by? We're going to do it this week. Great. I'm going to put a new date on the calendar. Next one, Dorothy, did you get this done? Assuming it's the week it was due, she goes, yes, I got it done. Great, done. And then you just go through and hammer through all those things. Now, a weird thing happens. It builds in accountability as part of your life together. Without you as the leader having to manage all the different people doing the things they said they're going to do and following up and checking in. So now you've done a quick check-in. Now you've done the monkey handler. Shouldn't be more than 5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, right? So you're just hammering through all the things that you got to do. Then we go to what's called the lightning round. So check-in, positive energy. Monkey handler, grounds accountability. Lightning round. Lightning round is where you do a real-time agenda building in a moment. But here's what a lightning round is. So most meetings are kind of run like this. The leader thinks through, I've got a list of 10 things that I want to talk about in our next meeting. And they've written them all down. And they get to the meeting. They go, okay, everybody, here's the agenda. Here are all the 10 things we're going to talk about in the meeting. And the leader powers through and gets through all the stuff. And they finish the meeting and the meeting is over and off they go. What the leader didn't get was frontline data to figure out whether or not that agenda was the right agenda. So what a lightning round is comprised of is everybody in the room gets up to 2 minutes. And the 2 minutes include, someone just left and is being readmitted. And I'm getting another text here. Let me just make sure that person has what they need. Okay. So what happens is, I just got distracted. Somebody tell me where I was.
Lightning round, everybody gets 2 minutes.
2 minutes, thank you. So what happens is, and there's different ways you can do this depending on the business you're in. So you'll have to decide what elements you need. But at minimum, I recommend you would say, each person goes around and you as the leader simply ask, what are your top three priorities this week? What are you focused on this week? And if they also have a dashboard or a scorecard, you would review that then as well. So for example, a sales team usually would have some kind of a dashboard or scorecard that tells you how your sales are going that week. Or you might have a maintenance thing, or you might have a complaint handling, it depends on what your business is, right? But your business should have some kind of dashboard or scorecard that gives you information. And Dorothy is saying, She's implemented this. It's been super helpful. Dorothy, you want to say a word about that more than what you just said?
Yeah. So I have an ad agency, and basically like ours is super simple. It's, you know, we have our like managed spend target. And then for every client account, we've got a very black and white KPI that basically tells us like, is this account healthy or unhealthy? So we can really easily see at a glance, like how many of our accounts are kind of in an unhealthy place. And then we can discuss, you know, those specifically.
Great. Awesome. So, so what that means is that you would take 2 minutes, each person gets 2 minutes. And at the end of that 2 minutes, you as a leader, you might've come in with 10 things you want to talk about, but three of the priorities and two of the dashboards, you realize, whoa, that's way more important than what I wanted to talk about. And so what you would do is you would then at the end of that lightning round, after everybody's gone around and you're not discussing anything during this time, that lightning round is meant to be fast. They might say all kinds of things. You can ask clarifying questions, but you're not there to discuss what's actually happening. After the lightning round is finished, you get about a 5-minute break. You can do this in real time, and you're going to build your real-time agenda. And what you're doing there is you're identifying, okay, I want to talk about this item, and you're putting next to it the number of minutes it will take to have that conversation. I think this is 2 minutes. I think this is 5 minutes. I think this is 10 minutes. You go through, you look at the math, and you make sure that that is going to complete within the 90-minute time frame that you set. You might be about 25 minutes into the meeting at this point, 20 minutes into the meeting. You want to make sure that your real-time agenda honors that 90 minutes in total. And you want to leave a 5-minute buffer at the very end. So whatever, you just need to do the math and figure out how will we get to the end by 5 minutes to the end of the meeting. Then you run the meeting. So as a leader, and you have the timekeeper set an alarm that goes off 1 minute before the end of that time cycle. So if you say we've got 5 minutes, the timekeeper is going to set an alarm for 4 minutes every time, 1 minute before, so that when it goes off, everybody knows you got 60 seconds to close out the conversation. Now, you as a leader have the prerogative to say, I think we're onto something really important. I want to add 4 more minutes to the conversation, and I'll take time away from something else. That's the leader's prerogative. So you get to accordion it as you go, but you're always capturing the amount of time. And that is how you discipline everybody into a very strict way of running through the meeting. This is how you get efficiency. This is how you get engagement. One of the reasons engagement drops is that people feel bored and lost and confused about how long something's going to take or where we're going to go or where it's going. When you feel this structure, which may feel artificially rigid at first, it actually boosts engagement. People start to feel like, oh, okay, we're moving, we're cranking, we're getting there. We know we're going to be there, and we know my time's going to be respected. And that makes me feel good. So after you've completed the entire triage agenda, then you're doing one last section, 5 minutes at the end of the meeting. You do what's called a like best next time. Some people call it a Delta Plus, but I like best next time. And here's why. Everybody is required to do an active pass. And that means this: everyone goes around the entire room and you say, what did you like best about this meeting? And what would you like to see different for next time? And why are we doing this? Well, the main reason is because you are trying to avoid water cooler conversation. Water cooler conversation happens, or parking lot discussions, where after you have a meeting, people go talk about it like, God, that meeting, that went on way too long. Or that, can't believe that person said that or brought that up. And that's so dumb. And I can't believe the leader thinks. You want to eliminate that as much as possible. So this section of the meeting, and you tell them that. You say, this is to eliminate any parking lot or water cooler conversations. We're going to have it here together, live and in person. If you have nothing to say, you need to say the word pass. Why is that? The reason is because when somebody feels they have to say something, they're more likely to say the thing they're actually thinking. Not always, but often. So pass. Great. Chris, what did you like best? What did you want to see next time? I really liked how we stayed to the agenda. Next time, I'm wondering if we can get rid of the timekeeper. I think he's annoying. That's a process I don't really like. Okay, noted. And then you go to the next person. What do you like best next time? What happens is the meeting protocol, I always recommend follow it to the T for at least 6 weeks. Be very, very disciplined and don't change. Even if someone says, I want to get rid of the lightning round, or I think that timekeeper is a waste of time, or what's the point of the Monday? Anybody who says that, you say for 6 weeks, we can't tinker with the format. We can tinker with the format after 6 weeks. We first need to see how it works and how it affects us. And over time, as people get adjusted, they start to go, actually, that really is helpful. I don't want to get rid of that. But what you're looking for is, how will we evolve and improve our meeting? What do we need to do to evolve and improve our meeting? And so all of that can happen in just 90 minutes a week, and you will see accountability, engagement, and efficiency rising in your organization. Okay, so there you go. That's the high points of that training. You can go deeper in the training modules, module 4, along with the workbook. Comments, questions about any of this? Anybody want to talk about a meeting protocol they use that's different than that, that also works? You know, just because I came up with this doesn't mean it's the end all be all greatest thing ever. It's just what I came up with over a few years working at this. But maybe you guys have something that works better, or a technique that I'm always happy to learn from as well. So anything you want to share, talk about that, and then we'll close it out.
Not that works. I want to implement some of this because I suffer from squirrel syndrome too often.
Yes, very common. Very common. And what this creates is discipline, that your only task as a leader is to be on, and everybody on the team, you would want to say this to the team. Our job is to look for monkeys, strategic parking lot items, and tensions to process. If it's a tension we can process and we can do it in this meeting, that becomes an agenda item and we're going to process that tension. If it's a monkey, it means we're going to capture it. So as you're having the meeting, you're going to be capturing 10 or 12 new monkeys that are like, what needs to happen? That's a monkey. Go. Instead of discussing it now, that's a monkey that just needs to happen. Take it off the agenda. That's interesting. Good point. That's more strategic. That's at least a 3-month effort. Let's take that off, put it in the strategic parking lot. So that'll help you get really clean and think about matching the container with the content. Other questions?
When you're going through this, especially in the first 6 weeks, as you're working through that, you're going through, you get to that 5-minute break where you're putting together your live real-time agenda and you're putting times next to it. I already know myself, I'm going to be wrong. At least some of the time, if not all the time, on my times. So, yeah. Okay, I can understand. All right, look, I underestimate it. We'll have to take some time out away from over here. But I also can see putting 10 minutes now or 15 minutes or 20 minutes next to something. And I get to that. And whether it's an issue of engagement or whatever, we get through it in 2 minutes. We've got all that extra time. Hey, I love to get out of there early, but is there any advice around that?
You consider it a monumental win when you get a meeting out early. Anytime you come out of a meeting and you're like, hey, everybody, you get 30 minutes back. That's a huge win always. So the goal is not to fill 90 minutes. The goal is to allow for 90 minutes. And yeah, of course you're going to be wrong. You're going to be wrong all the time. That's not being wrong. You're just making guesstimates. And then the key is, you as a leader have got to respect that time. So if you say it's only 5 minutes and then you just keep rambling on, huge problem. Now, if you know, hey, I need this time, no problem. Just reset the clock and add more time and then make sure you take it away from something else. The really important key is, don't ever go beyond the 90 minutes. Really honor that, respect that. If you need to continue conversations, create monkeys for offline meetings. That's often what monkeys are. Just, we're going to have a meeting outside this meeting. Fine. Have that meeting outside the meeting.
One of the things I do is I maybe do play a game at the beginning, like a minute-to-minute game or a door prize or something like that, just to get the mood lifted up at the beginning. So
I love it. And I love it. That's,
women like that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. I love it. Dorothy, you and I had a conversation last time on this discussion where we were talking about your opening, and I gave a little pushback on you. I can't remember if you remember that, but I don't know if you remember that, but
I wonder
how you process that, if at all.
So I admit we're still doing our kind of like roses and thorns to kick off the meeting, which is partially because I really like what you talked about with like making it about values, but we have not made a ton of progress in defining our values yet. So I admit I have not shifted that. But I also think it's working for us is the other reason that I think I'm hesitant to change it is because I think everyone really likes it. So I don't know. But we have implemented a lot of the stuff you've talked about. I mean, the scorecard has been a massive help. Another thing we've done that's been super helpful is, you know, when we have kind of a, you know, say we have a meeting where we're kind of all trying to put our heads together on strategy for a client. Instead of just coming to the meeting and just kind of discussing from scratch, we're kind of, you know, making everyone like put their thoughts into Slack in advance so that we can all kind of review at a high level. And that has really helped our meetings become a lot more efficient and kind of stick to time.
Love it. That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, if something's working, I think it's great. The goal there for you guys is about that relational connection, I think, partly. And I think that's useful. So if you ever do get to the point where your values evolve and they're more clearly articulated, the way I think about it is it's not like you have to do the same thing every week, you know, so you can always introduce something and then change it up the next week and change it up the next week. And that's fine. As long as there's just a little bit of human connective tissue at the beginning of a meeting, it helps.
Yeah.
Awesome. Any other questions or comments about that? And if not, we'll just open it to any coaching that anyone needs, if you have any needs.
You talked about how the strategic meeting is run very differently than the tactical meeting.
Yes. So the strategic
meeting, is that something we can talk about now?
Yeah, sure. We can talk about that. Yeah. So the strategic meeting is, you know, you should be having a running list of strategic items that that parking lot should be always kept a kind of in a central location, just like your monkey handler document, so that it's always kind of accumulating. And what you do is I generally recommend that people put on their calendar a monthly 2-hour strategy meeting, whether they think they need it or not. You can always cancel it, but I would always have once a month, 2 hours that just says strategy meeting, and no one has to know what the agenda is, because the agenda gets populated based on what's happening in your tactical meetings. So what'll happen is I generally recommend in a strategy session, you have more time to discuss fewer things. You might only have 2 agenda items. You might have 3. I don't recommend more than about 5 usually, if possible, because there's a lot that has to go into having a good strategic conversation. Before you have the meeting, there's preparation that's required for a strategy meeting. So you would need to say to people, this is our agenda at least 2 weeks in advance or a week in advance that says, this is what we're going to be discussing. And then you're saying, Dorothy, I need you to prepare, do some research on the best cost of X, Y, and Z. And I want us to debate that and discuss it. And I want Chris, you're going to need to come. This is our agenda item, and it's more. We're going to be talking about locations, and you do some research on whether or not we're in the right location or whatever, right? So that's where you have more preparation. And then once you get into the strategy meetings, you would still have a timekeeping. It's just more like this is a 25-minute conversation or a 30-minute conversation, and you're still going to kind of have a time. It's just way less structured on purpose. So you can still do the check-in at the beginning if you want. It can be different. You don't need a monkey handler. You don't need lightning round. You don't need all these things. I still recommend a like best next time at the end. I think that's useful, but it's way less structured, and it's deliberately that way so that you can just unfold your thinking a bit more. Okay. Let's open it up to any coaching needs, if anybody has any.
You're muted, Renee.
Yeah.
We can't hear you, Renee. Yeah.
Still muted. I'm going to ask to unmute you. Maybe that'll help.
There you go. Okay. So one of the things I've been struggling with about this time of year, this happens, you know, cause our school year starts in August, ends in May. And when we get to this time of year, everybody is just, I think they're just getting tired and worn out a little bit. And so we kind of go into teachers getting, just a lot of drama is going on between them. And then they try to bring the directors in, and sometimes the directors, they're in a tough position because, you know, they're having to try to listen to the teachers and what they're dealing with. And then they're trying to help admin, you know, so they're right in the middle between admin and the teachers all the time. And sometimes they get sucked in to the weeds with the teachers and hard to bring back over to be more objective with the admin, if that makes sense. And so
go ahead, keep talking a little bit so that I understand what you're saying.
So let me think for a minute. So for instance, what happened last week, I don't know if you guys heard about that shooting that happened at that private school. Did you hear about that, the shooting? Okay, so that, we're a private school, so all the teachers really got worked up and panicked, and you know, and of course I was out of town, so that didn't help any. So they got really worked up, and then they were saying, they're on their group chat saying, we need a security guard and we need this, and everybody's arguing, and then my directors got involved in it and they started arguing, and it just became ridiculous. So what I did is I could just, usually my directors are pretty good about, okay, I'll talk to admin, I'll talk with Renee, we'll get back with you. And they usually leave it at that, you know, and then we can come back and work with the teachers. But they were so panicked. They were just panicking all over the place. And so I tried to get in on that group chat and just kind of shut it down, but it was getting, I just actually need to be in person to try to settle it down. So I called the chief of police in Fountain, you know, where I live, and said, hey, I have all my staff, they're in a panic, they're stressed out, and I'm out of town, and I'm really having a hard time getting them calmed down. So he said, okay, I'll go down there in my uniform and talk to them and calm them down and let them know that it's a 1% chance that someone's going to come in and shoot up the school, at least settle it down. And so that's what we did. So did I do the right thing, you think? Or I mean, he did it. He came down, he calmed them down immediately, and I finished my trip, came back. And then we actually had a meeting with him last night, and he helped us lay out a plan, and he's actually going to do drills with us and everything. So it was really, it turned out great, but that's how it ended up.
I think you did the right thing based on the results. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think, yeah, all I can say is yes, I think you did the right thing. That was okay. Good, a good idea.
Yep. Yeah. So, okay. So.
Sorry, I can't be more helpful. You did a great job.
Okay, good.
It's a scary and stressful time, and it's a strange experience to be in what feels like a potential war zone when you're a teacher. You know,
it's yeah,
a fairly tragic part of our culture.
Yeah. Well, and he's going to help us, like getting the parents involved, because then it was trickling down to the parents, and then the parents were getting more fearful. So it was just going through everything. So we invited the parents to come to it as well. And then we scheduled more meetings that we're going to have that's going to involve parents, teachers, everybody. We're getting radios and stuff, but we actually have a pretty good security system here. But you know, they shoot through the windows. I mean, you can't, you know.
Can't stop everything.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you got the law enforcement involved like that, because I think police and sheriffs, et cetera, they're often, we found this out, we had a bad situation where somebody did something they shouldn't have had to do. We called people in. They actually are, a lot of cases are really very willing to help out and get involved, because it gets them involved in the community they're working in, and they love that. Mm-hmm. Especially in a situation like yours around education and schools and such.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Good stuff. All good from my perspective. Yeah. Really good. Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
I'm going to get a chance to try some more of this stuff, because we're actually starting training new people over the next 2 weeks. So I'll be in
awesome.
A whole bunch of that.
Love it. That's great. Very cool. Dorothy, I feel like the last time you were on, you were sort of working through some stuff, just checking in on you.
Yeah.
Updates.
Got a big update. Lisa is unfortunately resigning.
Oh no, what happened?
It's heartbreaking. So the vertigo that she was dealing with has just gotten worse and worse. And her doctor is, you know, recommending some, a surgery and some more intensive treatment. And on top of all that, she's also pregnant. And based on the timing, I think she knew she was pregnant when she started the job. So I don't know kind of what her plan was, but yeah, it's heartbreaking on both sides. Like, she was really emotional when she told me, cause she loves it here. And, you know, she said, this is the first job she's had where she has felt valued and felt like she's really making an impact. And, you know, and on my end, like she was a dream hire. Like, the difference that she made in our company in just 3 months has been, just transformative. So it's really kind of hard to lose her. But I will say I was very proud of myself, honestly, because it's the type of like blow that would have had me like a puddle of tears on my office floor a year ago. And I actually felt like very calm, when she told me. And so, yeah, I'm just kind of holding on to the, potential that this is gonna, kind of lead to something that, something great that I, maybe can't foresee, but, I've been here before, so.
Yes. Well, and also what it sounds like she was doing was installing things that, that get to stay in a sense. Like, there are a number of things that I think she did that don't leave with her.
I hope so. I mean, really all of her kind of the project management piece and everything, like, it's all going to come back to my plate. And I think my concern and what I want to avoid is I don't want to just go back to how it was going before. So I really want to kind of try to get from her as much as I can over the next month before she leaves. Like, what kind of systems can we implement? Like, how can I kind of create better workflows to kind of model how she was doing things, so that we can kind of stay, not be in the same place we were kind of before she was here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Were you on the call when we did the delegation matrix? It was 2 weeks ago, I think.
No, I think I was out of town. Is there anywhere that we can watch these call recordings?
Yeah, they're supposed to be on the program. Okay. So if you go to the coaching tab, you can see all the recordings all the way back. But some people have had a little bit of an issue, like the tab disappeared for some people. So if you don't see a coaching tab at the top of the program, let me know. And Amy just needs to reset a thing, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a technical term. You wouldn't understand the thing. Well, the reason that I'm asking is only because it's relevant to you managing workload when you're in this interim again. So are you going back to the drawing board? Are you getting Jackie involved again and doing the whole search? What's kind of the thinking?
The silver lining that I see to this is that we are actually now in the position for the very first time where it's just Jim and John and I. And so, it actually kind of, I think, creates a unique opportunity for us to really kind of take a step back and decide for the three of us, like, what do we want things to look like? And so what my gut is telling me is actually not to rush out to like start recruiting again. I actually think where I would like to go is, with our media buyer having left a month ago and now Lisa coming off of payroll, it actually opens up some opportunity. I think I actually want to like further reduce our client load and, kind of take out a few more accounts that kind of don't really have big growth potential and just focus on really kind of pouring all of me and John and Jim's energy into our accounts that do kind of have big potential and then further integrating the gig and kind of taking the opportunity to give more attention to that business. The big risk that comes along with that, which I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is that, I love the idea of just the simplicity of that, three of us really kind of, going after that, but it does open up a big risk of, no redundancies. And in particular, like if something were to happen to John, like, you know, that would kind of be a big area of risk.
Yeah, that it does raise a number of questions. So for sure, like the redundancy thing is important. So whether that's even just for John's well-being, like, you know, he wants to go on honeymoon. Who handles that, right? Maybe that's you. Maybe it's
he is somebody. Going on honeymoon in 2 weeks.
No, he is. Yeah,
yeah. That's yeah.
why I said that. Yeah. You know, so his and we've talked about this kind of his mental well-being about being able to like. Now maybe that gets handled because you scale back client load and therefore he's deeper on fewer clients and it's a little easier. But you know his personality is such that it's going to be. He's demanding.
That's what he says. That's what he says is that like with because we already did reduce you know our accounts by a few and now we're talking about doing it by a few more and so like his perspective is like this is like it's way easier for me to you know kind of do this than it is to. You know, manage media buyers doing this.
Okay.
So, right. So yeah, one question I'd love to ask, I don't want to monopolize the time though. So, Chris, Doug, like, do you guys have anything that you're trying to talk about? Okay. So the one question I have is, you know, we are going to shift with any new, if we do bring on new hires right now, I am going to shift as discussed to like a salary-based bonus structure, but yeah. As it relates to Jim specifically, I am thinking of basically putting him on profit share in the same way that John is and just having John and Jim on profit share because both of them are just so integral to, you know, our success. And, you know, I would love for Jim to kind of have that same degree of kind of ownership in that way. And what I'm thinking of kind of putting in front of Jim is kind of a choice. So he's bought into the, you know, moving to the kind of salary-based bonus plan. So that's what he, you know, is of the understanding is happening right now. But I'm thinking of basically telling him like, look, if, you know, if you still want to kind of be in this place where we're in now of like looking to kind of pull you out of the agency so you can be full-time in the gig. And like, that's kind of the vision of where we're heading. Then we'll proceed forward with like this, you know, salary-based bonus plan. But I'm kind of wanting to offer him like, or if we are going to kind of reduce client load in the agency, just focus on really kind of concentrating on big opportunity accounts, integrating the gig more into, you know, what we're doing, offering him that if he would like to basically kind of change that mentality of not let's try to replace you, but really more like, you know, be in the agency long-term and kind of buy into like being, you know, kind of, yeah, being here for the long haul, offering him that 10% profit share, you know, as kind of, you know, the, like you can either be on like the salary-based bonus plan that everyone else will be on, and we'll kind of proceed forward with the idea of like pulling you out of the agency when we can, or if you want to go the opposite direction and really kind of commit to the agency, putting him on that profit share.
What's your read of why he's trying to get out of the agency?
Well, it's just that like, we want to build the gig and, you know, so the vision kind of has been for the last year and a half of like, you know, once the gig is in a place where it can pay him, that will, you know, find a new copywriter to bring into Needle's Eye and, you know, pull him out. But he brings so much more to the company than just copywriting, you know, like that really doesn't like replacing him is going to be a very hard thing to do as I know, because we've already been tried to recruit for his role. And I think the only reason that he would want to leave the agency is if, you know, kind of it prevents him from, you know, big opportunity in the gig, but John's involved in the gig now too. So now it's all three of us are involved in both companies. So like, it doesn't seem to make sense to like keep them as these totally separate entities in the way that we have been. I think it's like hampering the growth of both.
Okay. Yeah. Then if what you're saying to me is, hey, Jim's just this wonderful, smart guy who adds a ton of value and has a particular skill set, which is useful. But this other aspect of him is kind of irreplaceable or hard to replace for sure. I would give them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even present it as like a neutral choice. I would present it as your preference.
Yeah.
So I would say, hey, Jim, I would much rather this be the outcome.
Yeah.
If I were to give you this, would that be enough incentive for you to join me in this vision? So instead of like, you could do this or you could do this, based on what you just told me, my mirroring back to you is I would pitch them harder on the future you want.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause that's definitely what I want. One thing that's hanging me up on it is I feel like that would need to come with some change in title. Cause like right now his title is technically senior copywriter, which like really does not cover, you know, what he adds on a strategic, you know, from a strategic standpoint. I was looking at like chief strategist. I saw like chief strategy offers, officer is a thing, but that seems to be more about like strategy for the company rather than like, it's really like strategy for the clients is like what, so I'm kind of tripped up on like what an appropriate like title would be for him.
Pretty typical in agency land is chief creative officer. So most of the time, or creative director, depending on if you want to, you know, sometimes at an organization your size, that would be an overly inflated title to call him a chief. Usually they don't need chief at this stage of the company you're in. So I'd be a little bit careful about overinflated titles because it's hard to take away later if you scale and he isn't, you know, as good as somebody else who comes in. So, you know, I would say he's senior copywriter. I would say creative director. And that is very typical, like in agency land. And I don't mean like the kind of, you know, media buying agency, but if you look at like creative agencies that are all the big agencies, that's how it works. Your copywriter, your art director, they would, one of them would eventually ascend to creative director. And then they would basically be the brains behind the brands that they were managing. And they were, you know, they would influence copywriting. They might do some copywriting, but they're conceptually elevated above that. And because it's creative is a much more attractive title usually to creative people versus like strategy, which sometimes is less exciting. So those are the thoughts I have.
Yeah. I guess when I think of a creative director, like I would actually see that as like a separate role in terms of like someone who's like the strategy that Jim does is more on like funnel strategy and messaging strategy and like not so much like creative in the way that we use it of like, you know, like graphics and video and like the, you know, the creative, like creative direction in terms of like the actual ads we're running, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, so I've seen it applied in different ways. So I've certainly seen it applied the way you're describing. I've also seen it applied chief creative officers or creative directors who are in a slightly different kind of agency. And so the kind of visual medium is less important and material. And especially in ad land that you're working in, creative is like, you know, I did it on my phone really quick and it looked okay.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? That's pretty typical. So I would say in your case, I think it could still work, but if it still doesn't feel good to you or if it doesn't feel good to him, there are other options, which are like, almost like, this also goes maybe in the wrong direction because it's more logistic, but it's like account director, which is like, you are responsible for directing the account. So you're the person who, but it's a little more logistic sounding. It's less creative sounding. So that's why I opted more for the creative.
It could make sense, yeah.
Based on what you're telling me is, you could certainly do strategist. It's fine. Like the good thing about titles is it's really more about whether or not that's an attractive title for them. You can define it however you need to. So if you say you're now the strategy director, and what I mean by strategy is it's client strategy. You are overseeing the strategy for our clients. Fine, no problem. That works just fine. In agency land, that was called the director of planning. It used to be strategic planning, and then it got cut down to just planning. And it's a discipline from the UK, and so they were called planners. Nobody knew what a planner was in the US, so people were like, why don't you just call it strategic planning? You know, so anyway, I'm boring you now.
That makes sense.
But You have, yeah. I think you have a handful of options. And I think you want to, the only suggestion I have is I wouldn't want you to overstate or overinflate the title just yet, because it kind of, you send them to the top of the ceiling and then it's over. You're like, that's as
well. If I'm giving them a 10% profit share though, like no one else is going to get that, you know, cause that's John's 20%. John has 20% profit share. Yeah. Yeah. He has 20% profit share in the agency and he has 10% profit share in the gig. So it would basically be giving Jim in the agency what John has in the gig.
Got it.
So,
well, you could imagine a future, perhaps, if you needed to bring in, I mean, you could imagine a future in which you scaled to 3 times your size and you realize he's even better than you thought he was. And now you need more incentives to keep him. Yeah. You want to leave just a little bit left in the barrel, potentially. That's another thing to consider. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but that's why, like, hey, I can give you another raise and I can give you another 2%. I can give you this new title, you know, so you're kind of giving him, you're still giving him a career path rather than just bringing him to the end. Because in 3 years, you might have a certain situation where you really do want to keep him and you do want to give him a few more points in the business. And it doesn't have to go, you know, 10 to 20, it could go 10 to 12. And that's still consequential. Because 12% at an agency that's 3 times the size is very different than 12% at an agency your size. So that's just in terms of strategically thinking about how you incentivize people. I think you're still at the early stage of your growth. And so you want to leave runway and room to incentivize
That's fair.
And then the other thing is, I would just say, you know, a helpful exercise for you to play with. I'm going to do this super quick. Does anybody have anything else? Do you want to talk about? Okay. I'm going to do this really quick. So, it may have already.
Believe it or not, I'm still learning and getting stuff from the conversation with other people. So even though I'm not asking something, it's not that I'm not learning or gathering any information here.
Good. Well, that's the goal. That's the goal. Okay. So I'm just going to draw something here. Some of you have already seen this, but.
Of course, you will laugh, Shane, because now I have access to the modules or to the bonuses and the coaching tabs, but when I go to the modules tab, it's empty.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I just sent an email off. We'll see. It'll get
okay, good. So the support account.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's terrible. I'm sorry. Okay. So Dorothy, one thing as you're thinking about whether or not you need to hire an operator or an integrator or whatever, you know, and you can also do like fractional integrators, right? That you don't have to do like a full salaried employee. And there's different ways that you can think through, like, how do I want to delegate and automate my world and what I'm doing? And you could have John do this and you could have Jim do this little exercise too. But the goal is to just sit down and write down, like, what are all the things that I know I'm involved in? List out 10, 20 things, whatever, 6 things, whatever it is. List them out and on a piece of paper. And then effectively draw a little quadrant map that looks like this. And it's that which is hard and that which is important. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is, you know, difficult to do and really materially important to the business. And anything that lives in quadrant one on that list is yours to do, assuming you're qualified to do it, right? And that's an important distinction, because plenty of times leaders have the authority to do it, but are not qualified to do it. They don't have the experience to do it. So, you know, for example, you might decide, oh, I got to get into fundraising. And you're like, well, I've never done fundraising. I don't even know where to start. Well, you may not be qualified to do fundraising. You need to either get mentored or hire somebody or whatever, right? But the idea is that quadrant one is really your list of things to do. Yeah. Then you're going to look like quadrant two, which is, it's not that hard, but it's still important. That actually could be delegated. If it's not very hard to do, somebody else could theoretically do it, and it's important. If it's over here, this is quadrant three, it's really hard to do, but it's not that important. That could be delegated, because 90% is still an A. And so if you know important indicates whether or not it needs to be 100% A, a 90% A, or an 85% B. Some things that you do in your business can be done at a B level and it's fine. No one's going to fall apart over it, right? So you need to know like where do those things live? And that'll help me determine what things I could delegate. And then of those things that I could delegate, now you want to ask, is that delegate to John? Is that delegate to Jim? Or is that like, no, that's in this no man's land that doesn't really live with anybody. Now you got to figure out, okay, then that either needs to be automated or delegated to a person. The person could be, you know, a fractional integrator. If you're feeling
I'm onboarding an executive assistant tomorrow, which is really exciting. That's been in process for a while. So I'll have her as well. But yeah, that makes total sense. I did a time audit recently for about 3 weeks to get really clear on kind of where my time's going. So that was very helpful. Can I go back to something else you said?
Sure.
So I want to kind of dig in with you a little more on your comment about with Jim's bonus of like needing somewhere to grow to. Cause here's how I'm thinking about this. And please tell me what you think. Like so 10% was like the bonus pool that we kind of had before for the team. And because of Jim's tenure, like he was so heavily weighted in that calculation that he was getting like almost all of that. And, you know, I do think that 10% is like a very fair, like, I think it's very fair for like kind of, you know, Jim's like relative contribution and everything. And that said, I don't really see me wanting to, like, between Jim and John, that's 30%. I really don't see me wanting to give away more than 30% of our profits. Right. And so, but in my mind, like the incentive for Jim to stay would be that if the company's growing, his 10% is also growing. And I still have the lever of like his salary to, you know, like I can raise his salary, you know, if I needed to. But I guess I'm confused about like, do I need to leave room to give him more profit share? Because I feel like that's just going to come from like the growth of the company means that bonus is going to grow.
Not necessarily. It really does depend on what happens to your business, what happens to him, what his motivation, you know, there's a lot of things, right? So I'm just giving you that as food for thought. It's not a thing you or can't do. But for example, you know, one of my clients has, he had 20% of the business of a particular business. And this client, this guy reports, so there's a business owner. And then there's my client who hired me outside the business. And he was getting 22% of this business. And that 22% translated into like $6 million a year. It's a really profitable business, tons of profit coming off. They do real estate, private equity investing. And he has increasingly become the main guy of the business. He is the reason the business is successful. He knows everything, all the relationships are through him. He's a really, really critical player. And the owner has just increasingly just kind of like become an owner, less of an employee. So he's less involved, less connected, less. He's like, you're running the business, right? So this guy's like, I feel like at this stage of the game, all the revenue that I'm generating is my doing, not his doing. And I'm starting to feel a little bit of like, this doesn't feel fair anymore. He's taking home 30 million. I'm taking home 6 million. And I feel like I'm owed 10 million, you know, or whatever the numbers are. Right. So he went back and negotiated. And the guy was like, yeah, you got a good point. You know, I'm going to bring you to 30%. Now, if you had talked to that guy 5 years before, you're like, hey, you're going to give this guy 30%. He's like, no way, not a chance. He doesn't add that kind of value. There's no way that. Well, he didn't understand what was going to happen, and he didn't understand that he wanted to become an owner, not an employee. And so he needed more stuff to give away in order to do that. And so that's all I'm trying to give you is like, I want you to think about options. You have many different options. And it may be that there comes a time where you just want to be less of an employee and more of a business owner. And what that often means or can mean is you need to give away more of your business. Now, presumably at that stage, you're going to be more stable. You're going to have bigger revenue. You're going to have, and so you giving away another 10%, it's millions of dollars, but you're also making considerably more as a direct result of people that are probably doing the lion's share of the work for you anyway. Yeah. And maybe Jim, that may not be Jim. Sometimes as organizations scale, people who were amazing at one level become not so amazing at the next level. And suddenly you have access to greater level talent that you didn't know you had access to. That can happen, you know, really, truly. And so I just want you to be aware of, in fact, I would say it's quite rare that somebody who started at a company of three people, if it scales to 20, 30, 50 people, 100 people, that that person is still as talented. Very often, they don't quite make the cut. Not always. There are certainly exceptions. So, and that doesn't mean they need to go away or anything like that. It just means you got to structure it in a different way. So that would be my only thing. I don't have a problem with 10%. That sounds great. I'm just letting you know that in 5 years, if you've just crushed it and everything's growing like crazy and Jim is so instrumental and you're going on all these vacations, you're going to have resentment if you don't start to think about adding points to his total.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, it's so true what you said. I mean, if we're double the size, if we're double the revenue we're at now, then giving away more than that 30% is fine. Cause I'm like my portion of that has gone up substantially too. So that definitely makes a lot of sense.
And you also want to think about the potential of who else down the road might you need to reserve some points for. You know, there may be another player that needs 5 percentage points and they're a key clutch player in the system and they need to be an owner, not just that can happen sometimes too. So just leaving a little bit of cushion can help figure out what else do I need to do? And if you feel like 10% still allows for some potential cushion, which I think it does, like up to 40%, you could give away, still be just fine as a business owner. You can give all the way up to, 49%. Still be the controlling interest of a business.
To be clear, I'm not giving away any equity. It's just profit share.
I get that.
I came up with this bonus structure based on your previous feedback, the salary based, where it was all right, your target bonus is X, you can get up to 150% of that. And the number that I kind of landed on that felt good and felt comparable to what the previous profit share was 15% of salary as kind of the target bonus. And I felt good about that until I was chatting with my friends who work at, one of them works at Snapchat, another one works at another big company. And they were telling me that their target bonus is 50% of salary. And it just kind of made me question, are great candidates going to see 15% as the target bonus and be well, screw that. So but I can't really afford to, I can't afford to do 50%.
So here's what I would say to that. It depends entirely on industry. So you really want to compare apples to apples. You know, if I were to show you the bonuses that some of my clients on Wall Street make, I mean, it's 80%, 150% of their salary. They make 300 grand a year and their bonus is 6 million. It's insane, right? It's a completely outlandish. But if they came to you and were like, well, I get 6 million over there, you'd be like, yeah, then go back to Wall Street, work horrible hours and be with miserable humans and get paid well. So you definitely want to compare apples to apples and be like, what's the agency market rate, which is always changing, it's a moving target. And like anything, if you learn over time that you're like, wow, we cannot get people, we're doing this right now with Jackie, with another client of mine who is working on Wall Street. He offers really low salaries and really high bonuses. And people are like, not interested. Can't get anyone to look at it. They're like, you've got to increase the base and lower the bonus. His bonus structure is you'll make 500 grand and I'm going to pay you 125 grand of salary, but with your bonus each year, you're going to make a minimum of 500 grand. And they're like, not interested. I want that security of knowing that I'm going to get that, $200,000 a year salary with, and then if you want to lower the bonus, go right ahead. But so he learned over time, I can't attract people. And with Jackie in the role, she can give you feedback. That seems to be a deal breaker. Have you run that by Jackie, that number?
So the feedback she'd gotten from media buying candidates was we had the base at 85, 90. And we had a couple of people come back and say it needs to be 100K base. And I was like, great, 100K, sure, that's fine. But if that's the case, then 15%, does feel a reasonable kind of, target bonus. So
great.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, all very good questions.
Well, this has been so helpful. I feel complete. Thank you so much for talking through all of that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And the point of the group is that it's useful to the group too. And I think it is.
Yeah. Thanks everyone.
Awesome. Anybody else? Anybody else want to talk about anything pressing, concerning? Okay. Well, then I'm going to give you 15 minutes back and you're going to thank me for it.
Huge win.
So seriously, great talking to everybody. Thanks so much. We will see you not next week. I'm glad you're on this call. Next week, I am on spring break in Washington, D.C. with my daughter, so I will not be available for this call. And so you will get reminders. You will get email reminders saying, get on the call, get on the call, and they will be filthy lies. And so just remember, I said it here first. We won't be having it. I'll have Amy send out a reminder that contradicts the other reminder, the auto reminders. For whatever reason, we have not figured out how to turn off auto reminders using my CRM. It's super lame, but there you have it. Okay.
Great. Thanks, Shane. Thanks. That's awesome. Bye.
Good to be with you.
Thanks. Have a good holiday. Enjoy your spring break.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it, Doug.